Welcome to episode 143 of the Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K and AOS experience in Brisbane.
Ooh.
I'm Nathan, and recording with me tonight is Liam.
Good evening, everyone.
And we're here to talk about our little sojourn into the mortal realms as a little vacation from competitive 40K. How are you tonight, Liam?
Yeah, I'm really good, man. I'm actually recording from work. I'm doing night shifts this week, so keen to forget about the woes of actually being at work and talk about dipping our toes into the Sigmar experience.
Awesome, awesome. And as we've very subtly alluded to, we, with both Alex Terrison and Ben Warrior this weekend, went to the TNA fundraising event for Team Australian AOS. This was actually my first, Liam's first, and Ben's first AOS event, which was really fun. I think it's something that we've all wanted to try for a little while, and you know, we ended up not doing too badly. Do you enjoy it, Liam?
I had a really, really awesome time, and I think one of the cool things about this event was that, you know, I've always been very, very passionate about the fundraising for 40K events and, you know, growing that 40K community to try and support that world's team, because god damn do the Australians travel a long way to go play at these championships. And it's so cool to see the Sigmar scene trying to do some of the similar things and growing that community, getting people behind the national team. And so this was an event held at Club Pine Rivers on the north side in Brisbane, which is raising money to send the team over to it's not the Netherlands, is
it is the Netherlands. I think it's Amsterdam.
Yeah, in Amsterdam, that's right. And yeah, I'm wishing them all the best of luck.
Yeah, and the guys at the Northern Alliance put on an excellent event, and you know, really, as usual, that hard. Yeah, that venue is great.
Yeah, you know, it's look, I think it's an awesome venue to have aircon, organized lunches, big open venue to have lots of space to move about, and you know, it's clean, has a bar, all the things that you need for a gaming event.
So, would have been, about a month ago or something like that, I asked if you wanted to try your hand at AOS, Liam, and I don't think you'd ever had a go at it before, and I think you've proven a fast adopter of the game. Can you run us through sort of your sort of practice leading up to the event and your experience with the game, I guess, leading up to the event, a difference between that and 40K?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to quote Simon G from Brisbane, his podcast mentioned that one of the issues with 40K at the moment, which it isn't so much an issue, but it's more like a difference, I guess, from, you know, the past and how things have been, where 40K at the moment has two aspects of skill expression, and it's expression on the table and above the table. And the above table stuff is the list writing and the event preparation. And at the moment, that is the vast majority, I feel, of skill expression in 40K. And it's because the game is quite complex and the game has a lot of opportunity for list building expression. But on the table, you could argue that perhaps there's less skill expression than in previous editions. Whereas I think Sigmar is the opposite of that. And I say this for anyone listening with very, very little Sigmar experience. So I am very, very green in the Sigmar world. But the game feels very movement-based. It feels very mobile and flexible. And I feel like because of the homogeneity between a lot of the unit types, there isn't this huge, massive rock, paper, scissors element that sometimes it feels like it is in 40K. Of course, there's good and bad matchups, as always. I'm not saying there's not. But it definitely feels like it's a game that you play on the table more than above the table. And as soon as I started playing practice games, I actually really fell in love with it. I'm a huge fan of Sigmar now. I really love it. And I've only been playing for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I would say I've dabbled in it before, but I think everything you just said is such a good summarization of not only where Tent's at, but just Sigmar. And I found also, like, not quite being, I guess, as astute a player as yourself, I guess, it, you know, picking up on the rhythms of a game. But I love how much Sigmar you feel like you're always in the game with, you know, everyone from 40K loves to give shit about the double turn and everything like that. And it's a great meme, but it really you know, gives you hope for the rhythm of the game, winning priority at the right time, or, you know, knowing your battle tactics and just having a really flexible plan. So I think it really rewards, you know, being in the game and being tactical on your feet. I agree. I really, you know, last couple of weeks really fell in love with Sigmar as well.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I finished some life and work stuff up and really dived into the Sigmar, and I was looking at some Flesh Eater courts to start with, and then Nick Wright, venerable TMB Sigmar guru.
Our long-distance coach.
Was like, hey, Liam, you should give Blades of Khorne a go. And I now understand that Blades of Khorne are a very meta army, so I deserve a bit of that. But the Khorne stuff is just super movement-based. It has a lot of, like, denial, and I fell in love with this army and some of the absolute bullshittery that you can do with this army. I loved it so much, and I had a great time at this event. I'm keen to talk about it.
Oh, awesome. Well, how about we start talking about it with our round one versus Michael Magentes's fellow 40K boys, Moose Crucifixion team.
Before we dive into that, what were you playing?
I actually was playing Soulbite Gravelords. I have always been a big fan of the Vampire Council back from Warhammer Fantasy, and I had started an army about 2 years ago, again, on the conversion attempts of Nick Wright back then. And I'd started the army, but as I'd sort of fallen into a bit of a hobby lull with 40K a few months ago and with Old World, I'd actually just gone on a massive hobby tear through my Vampire account and Soulblight army. So was running a lot of what I'd already owned, which was ended up also, I think, being a fairly meta list with the Manfred's Legion of Night. So again, so much movement tricks, and really, really enjoyed playing them, and I'm keen to keep trying them out after the event.
Yeah, and you know, I have noticed how keen you've been on, like, the hobby aspects of some of the vampires, definitely more than the undead 40K Necrons at the moment. I think your love is very much for the Skelly boys.
I'm all lead belched out for the moment. I'm ready to. I've moved on from lead belcher to skeleton horde for the moment.
So we'll go through, I think, our rounds today and have a bit of a chat about the rounds as we go. Just before we do, I obviously always like to give a shout out to some of the hobby aspects of the game. You know, I'm definitely not a paragon of painting and hobby and stuff, but one of the awesome things about Sigmar is the width and breadth kits. And I think that perhaps I'd say, like, a fantasy setting really lends itself to people doing their own things hobby-wise, because there's a bit more flexibility there. And I will also say that I think the height of models and things like that is perhaps less critical in Sigmar than in 40K, where there's, like, line of sight blocking terrain and things like that. And so it's really opened the door for some amazing companies like Proxy Wars, who have some awesome, like, 3D printed sculpts and things that are available for them. And we actually here at TNB got some good stuff from Proxy Wars. I got some minis I'm actually going to be using for D&D, like some Skeleton Knight stuff. And the value of those sculpts and the things that they have, I think, just really lend themselves to that fantasy environment. And I think you got some stuff too, Nathan.
Yeah, I actually really like the 3D printing aspect of things, especially, like, you know, getting a bit more into the Old World fantasy side of things. You know, as you've said, the less sort of technical approach of the game means you have a lot more flexibility. I have got my vampires on circle bases, but I will be a square-based lad with at least one army eventually. So I'm slowly painting one dwarf at a time to put together a little force of Karakate Peaks. So, yeah, like, the I love the Highland Miniatures dwarves, and Proxy Wars stocks a few of them. So, yeah, got myself a little dwarf Thane that I'm going to be painting up slowly. So our first round into the aptly named Moose Crucifixion, which is a nice little foray into Sigmar team names. Had a good friend of ours, Mikey Magentes, on that team, also a 40K convert. But how'd you go in round one after we... one thing to mention as well, I guess, is that this was our four-man teams, which you and I are both familiar with back from earlier Gladiator gaming events and also Newcastle team events.
Yeah, that's a blast from the past, isn't it? And Speaking of Sigma team names, for the record, for this event, our team name was Rookies from the 41st Millennium. So we came in as a labeled 40K team, ready to give Sigma a whirl. So round one, I played Matt Gammy. And I've actually played Matt in 40K before a number of years ago, but he's been really keen on Sigma for a number of years, and he's been out of the 40K scene. And Matt was playing Silverneth. For those listening, look, one thing I am going to say is Nathan and I are going to get the names of Sigma rules wrong. I like to say that I have a good understanding about what things do, but I definitely do not know the names of rules like I do in 40K. So Silverneth were definitely an interesting first experience for a opponent at a tournament, because they're a really complicated army from my perspective, where stuff teleports all over the table to the trees and things like that. Like the big trees can go through the little trees, and it's just trees and stuff everywhere. And it shoots a lot, and it's all actually quite intimidating, to be honest. But the big issue that that army has is that it can teleport to the scenery pieces, the like the wildwoods. But if you have any enemy units within 3 inches of the trees, they can't teleport to the trees. So he gave me first turn, and I just put units in three of every tree on the table to just mean that the army rule just doesn't work. And yeah, he got kind of boxed in his deployment zone and sort of lost a war of attrition and couldn't really leave his deployment zone. And it was actually a very, very rough game. And Matt was an awesome opponent, like absolutely such a gentleman that whole game, because he was like, I was doing stuff, and he's just like, oh, you can't do that. Like, that's not how it works. And I'm like, oh, fair enough. Like, and he was like teaching me throughout, but the matchup was quite bad for him. And I think my approach being so aggressive, really bringing that 40K aggro style into Sigma, he was really not expecting. And he was like, oh dear, I have made a horrible mistake. And in Sigma, just for those 40K players listening, you're like, a 40K max score is 100. In most Sigma missions, the max score is like 28. And in this event, to get a 20, you have to beat them by 17 points. So it's actually quite hard to do that in Sigma, much harder from my perspective than it is in 40K. And this round was 28 to 14 to me. So a big win for my first Sigma tournament game against a really gentlemanly opponent.
Excellent, mate. Well, good little debut, especially. It is interesting with those faction terrain pieces that, like, as soon as you go close to them, it turns a lot of them off. So having an army as speedy as the corn would have been helpful there. I actually played the mirror match versus another Soulblight army versus a lovely lad, Luke. So we ended up, he had a slightly different army. I had Legion of Night, he had a Legion of Blood, which has meant a lot of unrendable characters and unrendable dragons and such, which was great for my army with lots of attacks and no mortal wounds. But the wonderful thing I think about Soulblight is its ability to effectively just stay in the game, even in its mirror, just because of the amount of like units coming back and how fast it moves and how flexible it can be. So I ended up getting, I think the final score was about 16 to 22. The Soulblight army in Sigma, effectively, you get 3 points at the end of the game for doing a certain task, a grand strategy. And the Soulblight one most commonly taken is bring back a number of units that are killed. Neither of us killed enough of each other's those sorts of units to actually trigger that for either army. So it ended up being a quite low-scoring game because we were very cagey to start off with. But that was a lovely game. Luke was a great opponent and could actually took me through quite a few things on Soulblight that, you know, it was a great learning game for me. He'd been, similarly an old 40K player that is now very focused on Sigma. So really good round. Alex got a win into Pat with his Skaven. And then Ben got the win on Mikey, a nice little 14-6 win with his Trolls. So we ended up winning the round 49-31.
Big round win. Very, very happy with that. And, you know, I think for me, one of the really great things about this event and why I really want to go back and play more Sigmar events is that I actually kind of like not knowing what's going on. Like, I know that might sound really silly, but when I'm playing a 40K event, I feel like I always got to be like watching the games and understanding what's going on. And I remember walking over and looking at your game, Nathan, especially because it was a mirror match. I walked over and it's like that Ralph Wiggum meme was like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I have literally no idea what's going on. I look at the table and I'm like, there's some bats. Like, I just don't know what's going on, man.
But no, it's awesome. So hard to tell, like, what the score is or who has the ascendancy. Like, I feel like in 40K, like, it's never perfect, but, like, you have a good idea of, like, where the game looks like it's at once you're told, like, what round of the game it is and that sort of thing. Whereas Sigma, it's like, I just have no clue.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Someone could get the double turn and just end it.
So that was a spicy win. And then round two, we went into Hub Marines, which may be a joke that I don't understand.
I don't get the reference.
but that's fine because we are the rookies from the 41st millennium, so we have no idea what's going on. So in this round, who did you play, Nathan, round two?
I ended up playing Luca with his Disciples of Tzeentch. So obviously a lot of armies have a bit of crossover with the demons and such, as you would have with the Khorne yourself. But this was very reminiscent of some 40K games I played where there were a lot of big birds and there was quite a long magic phase. The funny thing about the Tzeentch was effectively the amount of casts in the battle round, both my casts and his casts, if they added up to the Tzeentch magic number of 9, he would get a free Lord of Change. And given he had a million lizards, he got 2 free big birds throughout the game. It ended up being a really fun game. We ended up with, I think, a 21-20. Really, really scrappy game. I just ended up throwing, like, he had a big unit of cavalry that I just kept throwing, like, shitty little bats in front of and slowing it down. He had a great play where I needed to charge something in the game, and then he managed to turn one of my skeletons into a spawn to engage both my units in, like, my end of my movement phase or something like that to stop my battle tactics. So really different dynamic stuff that you can do in Sigma. So, yeah, really good opponent. Really enjoyed playing against Luca.
Awesome.
How'd your round two game go, Liam?
So I played a guy called Kobe who was playing Ogre Moor Tribes. So they're the really big ogres, the, like, really wintry themed mammoth stuff. And he had a model called Kragnos, which is like one of the Sigma god models, and he's the god of earthquakes or something. And the basic shtick is that he gives out an aura of when you roll charges, you roll 3d6. And this army does impact mortal wounds that increase depending on how high you roll charges. So the army synergizes really well to deliver a lot of mortal wounds on the charge. The key point there is mortal wounds on the charge. You have to actually do charges for that to work. And Khorne is a really disgusting army in the sense that it has a thing called Blood Tithe, there's been some 40K armies in the past that have had a Blood Tithe system where whenever anything dies for either of us, you get to do certain stuff. And the one of the options that is really abusable is one called Nerdlust, where at the end of either hero phase, just like the command phase in 40K, you get to move a unit, D6, one of yours, and you can go into engagement range. And one of the big problems with the Ogre Moor tribes is that nothing in that army can fall back nothing in that army can retreat. I'm going to use the Sigma nomenclature there. Nothing can retreat and do a charge. So one of the issues that my opponent had was he gave me the first turn. And I moved 5 corn dogs, the lovely little yappy yaps, basically right in front of his army. And then in his turn, I murder lusted and tagged everything, every single unit, because he put it all in like a big ball. And and so he couldn't leave his deployment zone. He couldn't do anything, couldn't charge. Turn two, I put 5 corn dogs in front of his whole army. And then in his turn, I tagged everything. Turn three, I put 5 corn dogs in front of his whole army.
Oh, my Lord.
And Kobe was laughing. He was actually a really good opponent as well, and he was very, very, very good, good sport. But it was a really, really brutal game from the perspective that he didn't get any primary points until turn four. And all of his, I was going to say secondaries, because again, 40K player, but they're called battle tactics.
You're getting there. Well. You're learning.
I'm getting there. I'm learning the language. All of his battle tactics require him to like be outside of his deployment zone and be aggressive. And he just really, really can't do that. So this was a really rough game. I won 28-4 was the score in this game. An absolutely brutal game where I pretty much didn't lose anything that mattered other than some little chaff units. And in the late game there, one of the abilities that this Khorne army has is it, in my hero phase, can pick one of your units and move it 8 inches towards me. So once I ran out of crappy units, I was still just pulling him into combat and stuff. So nothing in his army ever got to do a charge against anything that mattered. Kragnos, this big guy, he has this crazy ability where he can basically like one tap kill a monster when he charges them. But he never charged. He made zero charge moves the whole game, which is very, very grim. And I was pretty happy with how I sort of shut down that army, but it is a horrifically bad matchup for Kobe. So I think he did the best he could.
Well, who said the monoliths aren't allowed in Sigma?
I might have played 4 big models in 40K, and now I'm playing 4 bloodthirsters in Sigma. I'm noticing a bit of a trend.
You finally come to your roots as a knight player. It's you know, it's all that
was always going to happen one day.
Yeah, all those moving around big combat bricks. That was all a big waste of time. It was all actually a ruse.
But this was actually a really tight round for us for the rookies from the 41st millennium. We ended up getting up 42-38 for the team points. So really only 4 points between the teams. Very, very close.
Yeah, very close. We had Alex pull out a nice little draw, and then unfortunately, despite the dinosaurs took their revenge in the Jurassic Park sequel this round, where they got a big win against the trolls. So managed to scrape together the points that we got over the line, and we go into round 3 against Simple Math.
Simple Math. Now, before we dive in and talk about Simple Math, like I said, I've only been playing Sigma for like a couple of weeks, and something that was really funny about this round was on this team is someone called Samuel Galeo, and he's like a really talented painter in the Sigma scene and does some commission work. But as of about 2 weeks ago, Sam also had a Khorne army. And quite humorously, because I was getting into Sigma, I actually bought Sam's Khorne. He posted it for sale. So I bought Sam's Khorne. I painted it to my standard, which is, it's something. And then I ended up actually playing against Sam with his own models as of like a week and a half ago. So it's actually a bit of a really small world hobby scene moment.
And how did you go against Sam playing him with his own models, Liam?
So Sam was playing the Sons of Behemoth, however it's pronounced, and they're the Imperial Knights of Sigma, right? Like, you know, they are, the whole army is 3 big boys, 4 of the like still dreadnought sized giants, and it is just crazy. Like, you know, some of these models have like 35 wounds and counters 30 models on objectives and stuff. But quite similar to the Ogre Maw tribes, nothing can fall back and nothing can retreat and charge. And so it's kind of a little bit restrictive in what the units can do. And so, just as an aside real quick, one thing I noticed about Sigma, Nathan, I think you'd probably agree with this, is that in 40K, it feels like everything can do everything, as in like, most things that are competitive can like fall back and charge or shoot in combat or advance and charge, etc. Those abilities are really rare in Sigma. Like being able to run and charge or fall back and charge is actually quite a unique ability. It's not just like sprinkled everywhere. So when I'm talking about like armies not being able to do stuff, that's not me like poo-pooing on a faction. It's actually just because that's something that's really uncommon in the Sigmar rule set. This was a really, really fun game because I know how scary, just from having a bit of a gander at lunchtime, how hard some of this stuff can hit. So I was terrified when he was really aggressive and killed all... my list has 4 Bloodthirsters, 15 Fleshhounds, and 12 of these Fiends, 2 units. He actually managed to kill everything that wasn't a Bloodthirster at the bottom of... at the top of turn 2. So I had, like, everything dead. But even scarier, the big giants had this monstrous action where at the end of the charge phase, they get to move 3d6 and can move over enemies and into combat with new enemies. So me thinking I had a big 40k brain, I screened Scarbrand, my big hitty Bloodthirster. I screened him and was like, yep, no way a giant can get him. And he just got him immediately. Didn't even slow him down because he just charged a unit of and just, you know, jumped over them and hit Scarbrand in the head with a log.
Yikes.
Literally holding a tree. So Scarbrand died before he get to fight. All of my chaff is gone. I literally have 3 Bloodthirsters and like 2 little characters and a, you know, a piece of terrain against like a 2,000-point army. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be pretty bad. Turns out it was not bad. It was awesome is what it was. This was really, really cool. So my Thirsters have this thing for anyone listening where like one of them fights first, and when he fights, he picks another one to fight at the same time. And then I get the first activation in my turn anyway. So long story short, I fight with all 3 of my Bloodthirsters before your opponent gets to activate, because in Sigmar combat's like you, then me, then you, then me. So in my turn, at the start of the hero phase, I fought with a Bloodthirster because I was in combat because I had the blood tithe for it. Of course, I had blood tithe. My whole army was dead. And then, you know, I did some damage. And then in my turn, I fought with all 3 of my Thirsters again. So I fought with 4 Bloodthirsters before he got to fight. And I killed like 3 of the little giants and 1 big giant. And then I won the priority because, you know, he won the last one. So I won this one, a bit of give and take. So then I, in the hero phase, I fought again. And then I fought with 3 Bloodthirsters again and killed some bunch of stuff. And then his turn, I fought with a Bloodthirster at the start of the hero phase before he got to fight. And so I ended up fighting with like 9 activations of Bloodthirsters before he got to activate with any units. And I was just, and like, I, you know, he made this comment like halfway through, but he's just like, at some point I get to play the game. Like there must be a point where I get to start playing the game. And I'm like, no, it's only Khorne, only Bloodthirsters. And so I had like 9 activations of these Bloodthirsters, and I killed every model on the table except for this like 1 giant at the end of like turn 3. And Jesus. So like he like ran at me and killed like most of the stuff. And then like my retaliation was just that there were parts of it that were like really like finesse and like movement focused to like lock him down. And one of the things that's cool about Sigmar, for anyone who is thinking about it, who plays 40K, is that it's really permissive. Like in 40K, you have to pile into the closest model and stuff. Whereas in Sigmar, you have to end just no further away from the closest unit. So there was this really cool situation in this game where I had all 3 Bloodthirsters surrounding one of the big giants. But for me to actually be able to hit that giant, I had to unfortunately be too close to one of the other giants, because coherent engagement range in Sigmar is 3 inches. So it meant that I couldn't fight one giant at a time. And this was really smart from Sam, because he knew that I can't kill 2 at a time. And what I did was, even though I was in base contact, I basically used my triple activation, because of the way my Bloodthirsters work, to pile in around the one I was already in combat with. So even though I had to start the phase in combat, I actually piled in out of combat from this other giant by moving models in a weird order. Kind of bad. I explained that very poorly, but I was like, yes, like Sigmar good is basically the end of that story.
It really adds that creativity back to combat movement, which I really, which is really cool.
I really miss that from 40K, and I think it's why I've really fallen in love with Sigmar. But no, despite the fact that Scarbrand got yoked into the stratosphere by a big boy with a log, This was a big win for me, 27-16 in the end.
Nice.
Happy with that round.
Well done, mate. I ended up playing some Soulless Fishmen run by a lovely guy, Matt Daly. So playing against the Edenith Deepkin, like
all
big,
thralls.
All the thralls, these big 30-man unit of thralls, like hectic recursion, like bringing back like D3+3 in each of our turns to these big units. He had ways to get ward saves, this faction terrain, and some really cool characters. So it was a really smartly built army in terms of a lot of synergies. And like, obviously, I'd never, you know, I'd heard of Fishmen before, but I hadn't actually played against or had any idea what his army did. So I was very much just trying to, we played Geomantic Pulse, which is basically the main objective, like moves along the table. So I was really just trying to like make sure I ticked off all my battle tactics, like making sure I could do something each round and like hold what objectives I could with his massive 30-man units on that I just couldn't shift. And he was like, they basically had turns where it was a little like Ninth Ed Drukhari, where it had like steps it went through throughout the game where it was more powerful. And I think turn three, his whole army fought first and had a 5+ ward save, and it was just blew me away. Again, that Soulblight recursion just allowing me to like pop up half-strength units where I needed them, score objectives, score battle tactics. I think the really fun thing at the end, like I was rolling horribly. I'd blown up my own Necromancer from a miscast. Like I was rolling once to cast all game. I like wasn't getting my units back for recursion, so I wasn't going to get my grand strat. But his grand strategy was effectively had these three boats, and his grand strategy was no enemy unit could be within three of any of the boats at the end of the game. I'm like, right, I have a way to deny some points here. Again, it's teams. Like, I know I'm going down, but I can keep it a little closer. I get my Vampire Lord, my teleporting Vampire Lord, that and I send him right over to the back of his deployment zone with the boat. And I do all the defensive buffs. Like, I give him the heroic action for +1 save. I cast a spell for +1 save. I use all the strategies for +1 save. As he sends this massive fuck-off turtle to come try and kill him at the bottom of the game. And I just managed to roll all the saves that I need to with my little foot vampire, which denied his grand strat. So that was one of my favorite bits of the event, just being able to sort of leverage a game where I'm going down and just like, you know, still be able to do those things near the end of the game to deny points.
And you mentioned something when we started recording about how like in Sigmar, I think as 40K players, I think we have this reflex where we're like, oh, the double turn is horrible. But I actually really, really disagree, where I think you can plan for it, but also it brings back this element where best laid plans can fall apart. There's not like a two up rerollable achieve this. It's like you have an almost 50% chance to get this turn. And if it goes your way, you can claw back some points in a bad matchup. And I think that's just, I actually think it's really awesome. I think it's really good fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you have the ability to obviously crush your opponent with it, but, like, I think it's also interesting, you know, I found playing against people when they did get priority, though, that they didn't always take the double turn because,
yeah.
And this is something I, you know, talking through with our Sigmar guide, Alex Terrison, you know, if they're not in a position to really crush you on that double turn, you can give them the turn, let them do a little bit, and then set yourself up to try and get a double in the next turn as you can kind of position yourself a little better. Like, you know, you don't take the 1-2 double because you'd rather take the 2-3 double or the 3-4 double.
Yeah.
And like, it's really a game of like that momentum of like, I'll let you have this now, but then I'm going to come and really come down later. Or gee, I really hope I get this, you know, 4-5 turn so I can score a little bit at the end. But then if your opponent gets that, you know, first turn in the fifth, they might shut down any chance of end of game scoring. So it's a lot of like give and take. And it's not necessarily that you always take the double because it's always the best, because sometimes it's not.
No. And one of the things that is really fascinating about Sigmar is that first turn's not a roll off. It's the person who has the least drops gets to decide who goes first. And for me, my army was 8 drops, which in Sigmar is like actually a lot. And so I never, ever get to decide who's going first. And what I was fascinated by was 5-for-5 games. Every single round, my opponent gave me first turn. And the logic there is that you're going for the turn 1-2 double to really like reinforce that early lead. But maybe this is like the 40K mindset, but giving me first turn allows me to take the table, get an easy big score in my first turn, achieve some nice battle tactics, and sort of it gives me the momentum, and also means that turn 2-3, I might get the double, and then that means that, now when we're actually in the thick of it, it starts going my way. So I found that really interesting. But I do also think from talking with, especially Kobe, the opponent I played in round two, I get the impression that the way that I play Sigma now is way too aggressive, as in like I'm setting myself up for failure. I'm just vomiting units at people thinking it's a 40K game, being like, take this, go! But it seems to be working. So I'll soldier on for now and see how I go.
You've never necessarily been one to accept the conventional wisdom, which it does seem like giving away that first turn is. But I also found, like, I think I went first in almost all my games because either I had less drops or I chose that. And I think because I had a grand strategy that I always wanted to do going first, that magical dominance. Whereas I think you would have had opponents, if with you going first, you got your flesh hounds out and you would have stopped them from being able to do that. And it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting, like, you know, how people decide to, I guess, you know, approach those games when you have a decision rather than a dice roll.
Yeah. And so that was a pretty big win for us that round, and brings us into day two. Now, Nathan, you looked a bit different on day two.
I did. I ended up doing something where I had double booked myself and unfortunately had to dip out on day two. But thankfully for all the other guys, I replaced myself with an actually functioning Sigma player. Thanks so much to Corey, who came in and actually played the Soul Blight list for us day two. But we got a major upgrade as we went and played the very cheekily named Riley Reid's backup dancers.
Oh, good grief.
Run by, captained by Eric Lathuris, another 40K veteran.
It was actually captained by Dave Kerr.
Who is a
Sigma veteran. I think that's just our bias as 40K.
Yeah, that's my bias talking. Eric was definitely the moonlight player there rather than the captain. That is my mistake.
Yeah. Like I said when we were recording earlier, I'm finding really enjoyable things about getting into the Sigma scene is that obviously there's the veteran competitive players who have a really, really, you know, robust reputation, but I don't know who those people are yet. And so I'm meeting everyone, you know, at face value and getting to know people. And Dave on this team is a veteran Sigma player with a reputation for, you know, consistently being very high performing and being involved in, the state team, et cetera, et cetera. And so him being on this team with some 40K veterans himself, like Eric and, you know, the very ubiquitous Nick Standing and Nick Argent, the double Nicks and the Eric trio, was quite an intimidating team. And at this point, they're 3-0 as well. And I knew there's no chance I get to roll dice at a venue without having to play a team with Eric in it. That never happens. I never get away with it. It's always going to happen. And so this was an interesting round where I actually ended up playing Dave. And Dave, like I said, is a very experienced Sigma player. And what I really appreciated about Dave, an absolute huge shout out to Dave, was that during this game, he was actually checking my understanding of the game in real time. And like what I mean by that is that he was not like assuming I didn't know things. What he was doing actually really tactfully was when I was moving stuff, he was just checking like, hey, just checking you've remembered to do it like in this order and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, man, like blah, blah, blah. And I felt that was so awesome from like a competitive player to have that mentorship mindset, even at a tournament game. And so huge shout out to Dave. Dave was playing this Stormcast list. That's a lot of the Draconith fellows, like the guys riding the dragon cavalry. Mm. And this is my first experience with a shooting Sigma army because Stormcast have these like raptor guys that have huge crossbows. And to put it in perspective, this unit shoots like grav sense in 40K, where it like shoots something and that thing dies. That's just what happens. And it's 30 inch range, and they start the game in deep strike, and they can deep strike turn one. So there is literally nothing you can do. You are going to get shot turn one. And these guys one tap a Bloodthirster. So, you know, turn one, turn two, turn three. So this is actually pretty grim. On top of that, these cavalry guys like vomit mortal wounds at you. They shoot and they hit in combat. They're kind of good at everything, but they are very expensive. It's a very, very small army. This game was really weird for a couple of reasons. So Dave's army is one drop, which classic Sigma. And so he chose for me to go first. Now, I like this game because there was a lot of like give and take. I was talking to him throughout, and I basically said, all your guns are in reserve. I can't kill them. And if I stay in my deployment zone, I'm going to lose. So I am going to vomit my entire army at you. I'm literally just going to advance everything in a straight line. And I'm just going to throw everything at you and make it so you have to deep strike everything in one spot. Because just like 40K, you've got to be 9 inches away, etc. So I did that. I did my double moves, and I pulled some of the cavalry towards me, and I slapped them with a bunch of Bloodthirsters, which wasn't a huge deal. But then in his first turn, he had to deep strike everything in like a ball, right? And in my head, I'm like, my one hope in this game, my one hope is that he has to deep strike in a ball. If I win priority in the next turn, I'm going to tag literally every unit in this army, and then it's just going to be a melee off. And I'm confident I can beat some archers with a Bloodthirster in combat. Everything did not go as planned.
Oh, no.
And Dave, unfortunately, got the double turn, the 1-2 double. So he came down and he shot a Bloodthirster and like a bunch of Fleshhounds to death. And then he got the double turn and he shot another Bloodthirster and the rest of my chaff all to death. So this is looking pretty grim at this point. And once again, yes. Scarbrand got absolutely slapped by some Raptor boys from across the table. He died again before he got to get to combat. But at this point, like in the previous game, I had a lot of blood tithe. And boy, did I do some nasty things with that blood tithe. So we did some fighting, and then with the pile-ins from the hero phase fight, I engaged these other shooting units so they couldn't overwatch in Sigmar. It's called Unleash Hell. And then I double moved and I pulled things into combat, and then I got the double turn and I pulled more things into combat, and I blah, blah, blah. And then after that double turn, his hero exploded because it Perils of the Warped and just nuked himself and took some boys with him and failed all his tactics. And it was this really bizarre moment where I was reasonably checked out when he got that double turn. But then with some combat shenanigans, some Liam dice rolling, to be perfectly frank, and some pretty horrific confluences of fate. So I know I've been talking for a while, but he has this this unit called like the Lord of the Seven Wind or something. It's an elf model that you can ally, a Lumineth model that you can ally into Stormcast. And he moves 24 inches. And then after he shoots, he moves 12 again. So he just moves everywhere and does whatever he wants. But probably this guy is not super durable. And he flew him over my army to go harass my backfield. And he got in combat with my little characters, the guys who don't matter. And he whiffed and didn't kill my Bloodmaster, who's like the Herald of Khorne. My Bloodmaster, this guy has 10 wounds, right? And he has a 5 up save and a 5 up ward save. So he's not like, this is the Lumineth model. My Bloodmaster, right, did 8 mortal wounds to him, right? Because for every 6 you roll to hit, he does 2 mortal wounds. And just like did a crazy amount of damage, left him alive on 2 wounds. Yeah. Then in the next hero phase, I'm like, I'm going to use the Khorne Orbital Bombardment, which for models that have 10 wounds, you roll 8 dice. And every 3 up is a mortal wound. I'm like, yes, I'm going to get him. I roll 7 3 ups. So that's 7 mortal wounds. This guy rolls 6 5 ups, right?
No.
6 5 ups on his ward save. And so this guy, this little Lumineth fellow, lives on 1 wound after copping the meteor of a lifetime to the head. He just doesn't care. He's alive on 1 wound. He's totally fine. And Dave was so nice. Dave's like, we're laughing about it. And Dave's like, do you want me to remove him? Do you want me to say he's a casualty? And I was like, no, if I'm going to kill him, I'm going to kill him fair and square. And you know what killed him? One flesh hound. Finished him off in combat before he could fight. So that was just really random. We were laughing so much. It was a very, very fun game.
That's so awesome, man. That sounds like an excellent game.
And Nathan, by proxy, Corey, you ended up playing Nick Argent, who is playing Slaves of Darkness. I now understand that Corey is a veteran Sigma player who plays Soulblight like semi-professionally. And so with respect, Nathan, I think you got a little bit of an upgrade in that round.
I think I had been, you know, put out to pasture, retired to a farm upstate, and they brought in the real adult in the room to come run the vampires.
So you got a big 20-0 win. I don't know what the score was, but I know you got a big 20-0. And my score versus Dave, sorry, was 19-5. So that it was a big win for me, but I don't think that score really encapsulates the game, sort of the game state, because it was very scrappy, very, very scrappy throughout. Which brings us to round 5.
Yes, you guys have gone 4-0 off the back of my rapid, unexplained overnight improvement, and your win versus the other three guys going quite well as well. And you guys played the Anti-Sigma Club, again with a couple of 40K veterans led by Jai Callahan, the veteran Necron player, along with yourself and me from the 40K scene.
Yeah, so, you know, the rookies from the 41st millennium play the Anti-Sigma Club. I'm getting a lot of on-the-nose humor from these names. So this round, I ended up playing Jai. As Nathan mentioned, he's a Necron player who's commonly in the 40K scene at a lot of the Gladiator gaming events and other events too. I've played Jai a number of times. And Jai was playing the Nighthaunt, which are... they're basically like the spirits, ghost, death guys, and their faction ability is, shockingly, fall back and charge. It's basically what they do. So I know I'm saying that's rare, but that's like their faction-wide ability, and which is actually pretty bad for me, because a lot of my army relies on like locking people down in combat. The other thing about this army is that it forms a death ball. Like, it has a whole bunch of auras that are all 12-inch range, and so the army forms this big ball where it's resilient and hits like a freight train. So I just kind of walked away from it. Yeah, that was pretty much the whole game, actually. Because he was like, oh, I've got this like big death ball and it's going to take the objective in the middle. And I'm like, I'll just hold the other two. And that was pretty much what happened. There were a few like funny moments in this game. Because like he's got this, basically this, you know, this big death ball of stuff, and it's only good when it's in range of like 4 or 5 different auras. So every turn, all I was doing was pulling units out of the death ball, because I can move his units, and so I was just pulling units out of the death ball, killing that one unit, getting some points, and then just walking away, being like, "No, don't come near me. I don't want to fight the death ball." and by the end of like turn 4, I'd killed most of the hard hitting units by actually pulling them out. And so then I could kind of go in and clean it up. The hilarious thing about the Nighthaunt stuff is that it's got a 4-up unmodifiable save. So
jeez,
the Bloodthirsters and -1 damage when they're in range of the auras. So the Bloodthirsters feel super lackluster because they really just can't actually kill most of these infantry units. But you know who bloody well can, Nathan? Scarbrand. And Scarbrand is good at what he does, because he just goes in and on a roll of a 1, he does 8 mortal wounds. And 10-man units no save, basically, he auto-kills 8 of them just off the bat. So he only has to kill 2 more with his other axe. So he was just going in, killing 10-man units every turn, living his best life.
After a few games of, sitting on the bench, Scarbrand comes back in a glorious return to claim some skulls.
He wanted it. The thing, my sub-faction for this event was something called Reapers of Vengeance. And what it means is that when I kill an enemy hero, I get two blood ties, not one, which is it's kind of my own little take on that, on what I thought was best. And in this Nighthaunt army, he had like nine heroes. Because the heroes are only like 60 points or something, and they all buff. So he had like a whole bunch of them in the center of the ball. And so turn three, I got in the ball and shot some and hit some and killed some and stuff. And there was one point where I had 17 blood tide points. And
Jesus,
I had literally nothing to do with them. So I just spawned some bloodthirsters to sit on my home field objective. I thought it was funny. So this was the last Sigma game for me for the event. And this was a 26-5 for me.
Jesus. Nice. Yeah. And
the one thing I found out in this game, Nathan, which I actually am not sure if I got a chance to tell you yet. So your faction terrain piece, my little corn like throne thing, it buffs prayers all cool shit for those listening. You can actually deploy that anywhere in your territory. It doesn't have to be nine away from the enemies like models do. So in missions where your territory, right, is up to halfway, you can literally deploy this terrain feature like on the halfway line, which is actually such a big deal for me, because that bloodthirster that pulls models towards it often gets out of range of the reroll prayers, but now it can just stay in range.
And hell yeah.
It was awesome. Anyway, very excited about that.
Oh, awesome. No, you know, big win, and obviously the other guys went quite well for a big 56-24, which, you know, meant that the old rookies from the 41st millennium ended up getting a big win of the event.
We did. I'm very, 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 very proud of us. And from my perspective, I will 100% be playing some more Sigma. I think the game is in a really good spot, and I think it was so much fun to dip my toe in the scene, and I intend to be playing some more Sigma events.
Well, I think you and I might have a practice game later in the week, as I very much agree, and I think I am looking forward to playing a bit more Sigma, and I think generally, not only Sigma, but Old World lately, I think I've really been enjoying just a little bit of a break, and, you know, playing some of these other games and, you know, trying my hand, and it's, you know, fun to go along to an event and, you know, meet some new people and play a new game.
Yeah, it's been awesome. With that, I think we might bring this to a close.
Absolutely. Well, you know, thank you guys. Make sure you share and subscribe and give us ratings and such. And, you know, we'll hopefully give you some more 40K relevant content next time around. But, you know, was a little fun little foray into Sigma. And with that, we'll see you next time.
See ya.